The Local Thread. Hello, welcome to Toledo Works, hosted by WGTE and Toledo Free Press. I'm your host, Stephen Zenner, here talking with local artists. We're talking to artists today on Toledo Works, and my first guest is a living and working artist in the Toledo area, Jay Dickerson, or as he's AKA'd, Dirty Kicks. How are you doing, Jay?
Yeah, I'm doing okay.
Yeah, as good as you can be. So you're a published photographer. You've been published in the New York Times, a number of different large publications. A few years ago, you won a top spot with some of the nation's top photo editors, and you've kind of had a good run with your photography work. And you're a documentary photographer. Is that correct?
Correct.
Yeah. But you also do some galleries. You show your work sometimes, but you're also published in different things. What got you into documentary photography?
That's always a question that I reflect on time and time again, because I grew up around photography. Indirectly through my father, but my passion really was ignited maybe when I would take my kids to school and I would kind of walk around the city. At that time, their mother and I were separating, so it was having an addictive personality, I didn't want to rely on the things that other people have relied on or pass the time or whatever. So, walking around downtown Toledo, just killing some time, while they were in school, I would just meet random folks on the street, unhoused population, commuters, I would meet just everyone just kind of chilling, and at that point, it wasn't really about photography because, as any photographer knows, you kind of start out photographing everything. So when I went and started taking those long walks, I didn't know what to focus on. But the cool thing about Instagram, when Instagram was a godsend for photographers way back when, was that I started to see and learn what street photography was. Mm-hmm. And I tried to apply some of the stuff that I would see there to what I was experiencing here in Toledo. But I started to hit gold when I would wrap up these conversations with people and ask for a photograph, which is so intimidating for an introvert like I am,
Right.
But it was cool. So the documentary stuff really, it started to take off once I started to explore. The street photography stuff is cool, but when you start to peel back the layers of the people around you, there's just so much, there's so much to a human being. So the passion for that really came probably year two. Then everything went crazy.
And that makes perfect sense to me, because when you're a street photographer, you could be doing it anywhere.
Right.
You're just kind of catching people anywhere. But you're talking about how after a year, you actually started to think about it differently than street photography, which is kind of what documentary photography is.
It's right.
Going a little bit deeper, going back to the same communities, going back into the same areas
right.
to make those connections and to document life. And how did that kind of emerge? You said that, after a year or two, you started to have some recognition. Is that, how did that happen?
Yeah, I still question that. For me, the practice was, how should I start? So like the notice just came with the growth of Instagram. But during that period, like even to this day, like you could look at my beginnings and up until where I'm at right now on there, because I used to drive around using my cell phone, taking pictures, which was crazy. And I never suggest for anyone to do that, but it was like, I would blindly shoot just to see what I would come up with because I was trying to understand digital photography at the time. Mm-hmm. And I find that digital photography is incredibly slow. There's probably someone that's cringing at me saying that because you can get 4,000, you know, seconds a second on there. But it's all of the moving parts, and my frustrations with digital photography kind of were born from there. And so while I was like, I guess my discovery really like took off once I like switched to film and I was able to like think less about what goes on inside the camera and more about the people. And then I was able to like ask questions, and there was this documentary that I watched, and I always like kind of start my year off called Everybody Street, and you can find it on like YouTube and a couple other spots. But it was like all of these artists that are like diehard photographers, and the things that they understood and the things that they shared were things that I felt about the people that I would encounter. So like I really started to notice things when I honed in on how downtown life was in Toledo, where the folks coming from the outside, living in, you know, Perrysburg, Rossford, all of that stuff, whenever they would roam downtown Toledo, they kind of kept to their own spaces, but there wasn't any engagement with the people who were like catching a bus or just trying to make ends meet. Like it was a clear line of segregation there. So I, you know, once I noticed that there was like certain parts of the downtown area I stayed away from because I figured it was like not worth the conversation, but I like locked in with the people that I needed to lock in with, and things kind of, again, they kept growing from there. So,
right. Yeah. And when you say you steered clear of areas of downtown, you're talking about more of the touristy areas.
Right.
Is that kind of what you're talking about?
Yeah, because it was, I mean, I don't want to say those people were boring. It was just like they're putting on a face mask. So I just want like the everyday person that's like not, you know, unapologetically them, you know? Hmm. And so that expanded into just the different neighborhoods, like the neighborhoods people would deem unsavory in Toledo. The neighborhoods I grew up in and were biking through and doing all these things as a kid. So as I like studied the history of photography and really like dove into Black and Latino photographers, the Bronx Documentary Center out in the Bronx is like one of my favorite points of reference. Again, things just kept growing for me. And I'm a person of like trial and error. So I'm like completely self-taught in all these respects. But It was just a thing, and like the everyday people are the most satisfying folks, you know.
As you've gotten to know these different communities, you've kind of highlighted them, you've brought them a larger platform.
Yep.
People have kind of been able to recognize you even by your camera. What's the name of your camera that you—
The Rolleiflex. Yeah.
So that's an interesting camera to choose in the 21st century. What, you know, you mentioned that the film kind of was able to get you a better interaction with people. You were able to focus more on people with the film. What kind of went along with that choice? Because you said you started with the phone, the digital. I think that's not necessarily outside of the norm for what's happening in photography right now, but that does occupy a very specific niche that's going on in photography right now.
Yeah, it's a film. It's interesting, right? Because like having a digital camera would trigger all types of anxiety, because I would always question, you know, if I had the right lens or the settings or something. And like one of the disciplines that I hold to this day, if I'm forced to be in a situation where I have to use a digital camera, I only allow myself to take one or two photographs, and I don't look at any of the work. So I could have dropped the ball on a shot, but it's like, yo, you live and you learn. But with film, I'm able to just like, I trust myself with what I do. So I know the challenges, the nuances. It's like that person that has their favorite pencil and they can create so many shades, right? Like, you know, like this pencil, what it can do for you on different types of paper and different types of settings. And the same thing is how I relate to film. I know the shots that other people may feel like they would drop the ball on is the shot that I'm going to get with this camera that's from 1957 and it's a fixed lens. So I'm the zoom. I have to move my body and engage. So placing those type of challenges in front of me helped me grow as an artist, because the digital camera was just like, I mean, I'm not mad at digital, right? Like, I have to use it every so often, but I put like limitations, and I just hate my work when it's digital. It's like, it's, you know, it might be cool for the audience, but it just doesn't touch me the way that, you know, my Rolleiflex does.
Right. Is it the handmade quality? I'm trying to kind of zone in on that use, because I know that it's a very intentional choice that you make. What about like the product of film? Because film one film is expensive now.
Yeah, it is. So, I mean, I do hustle. But yeah, it is. I mean, it's like, I like the pleasant surprises of knowing that I got the shot, you know, like that. The time between taking the photograph and then going through the development stages and letting the film dry and digitizing it and all of that stuff, or printing it in my dark room, like all of that stuff is, there's a satisfaction that comes with that that I don't receive from like a digital camera. Cause like taking a photograph and immediately seeing it within seconds, I just don't understand how you can grow. You know, and again, this is not a diss at digital photographers. I think digital photographers have their own challenges that they place in front of them in order for them to grow, right? But for me, it was like, yo, I'm not trying to buy a bunch of lenses or think about the next camera body. Like, I just want this one thing that does three things, and that's it, you know? Yeah. So, like, the film, the film is, I guess, just the, like, I don't have anything specific to say necessarily about being like a black and white photographer or even just dabbling in color. It's just it's that one thing that helps me communicate with folks, you know. So like, yeah, I'm gonna pause on I'll go on a tangent, man, because no, y'all, I used to get so irritated when people would be like, you know, it's the tones, it's this, it's that. It's like, dude, don't amp this experience up to be what it is. Like, understand why those tones come about, or why this happens, or why that happens. So it's like, I'm not going to listen to the dude that shot three rolls of this particular film. I'm going to listen to the person that shot 3,000 rolls of that particular film. You know, because they know the nuances the way I know the nuances. Yeah. So,
as you said, it's all in service to getting in touch with this community.
Right.
And from what I've seen, there's not a whole lot of other people kind of documenting just the everyday life of the neighborhoods and the parts of Toledo that you would go into. Right. What are some of the things that you initially kind of, the victories that you kind of, I guess, had with interacting with people in the community, but also I know there's been some challenges as well.
Just telling stories. I mean, it's, I mean, I've shared this before, I don't think in a podcast setting, but just with like friends or whatever. Like, one of the coolest things I experienced was, there was this woman that accidentally sent me a message on Instagram that was, intended for a friend of hers. And she, in this message, was like, you know, you should follow this guy. He shows a different side of Toledo that I feel like I'll never interact with.
And what a gift.
Yeah. So it was cool, but she accidentally sent it to me, and this was before you could like unsend something. So she had to like bite the bullet, and I appreciated it, you know, cause it, when you're doing that, it's such an isolate, photography is like so isolating, right? Like, until I meet someone, like when I go out on these walks, like, dude, there's so many blocks where it's just me and nature, you know, but then I pay attention to the sidewalks. I pay attention to people's yards. Like, I pay attention to all of those things and just the changes that come about, but like, it's a solitary experience until I like encounter someone. And I'm like I said, I'm introverted, I'm shy, like, so I'm measuring energy and all of these different things before I like say what's up to someone, you know, and see where the conversation goes. But again, just when people are able to share their stories with me or whatever, and however I'm able to like platform that like I think is cool because it's not about me. Like it's always about like what they share because like in my times of need, I've always wanted an ear. So for me, like being a listener is like the like that's my takeaway. That's my pleasure. Like it's just like helping somebody out if they need to get something off their chest. You know what I'm saying? So
right. And you mentioned that you're an introvert. I find a lot of photographers are introverted.
Yeah.
But what is it about the camera that allows you to, you know, this isn't like you're reading a book or right. You're not like off with a long lens. The Rolleiflex is, right. I don't know if it, is it a 28 or is
35? Okay. Yeah, 35 so, field of view.
So that's getting you pretty up and close with people that you may not know. Why would you do that as an introvert?
I guess that adrenaline rush, man. Like it's it's kind of cool to accomplish that or to like sometimes if I like meet some strangers, I can't help but to smile because I'm like, yo, this is actually happening. I've done this so many times, but I'm still in that space where I'm like, yo, this is actually happening.
And what is that? Can you kind of define? Because like I'm also a photographer, so I know what you mean. Like, but like, what is the moment?
That moment. I mean, it's euphoric for sure, but it's just like talking to someone and. You know, because I'm like, I'm on their time, right? Like, I'm taking a moment of their day or whatever. And so it's like, this conversation can go left or right. So like that moment when I say, like, would you mind if I like photograph you or whatever? Mm. And they say yes, it's like, all right, that's my first shot of the day. You know, like, this is the Hennessy at 4 p.m. Like, it's something, you know? So it's like, yeah. Having that accomplishment is, it's cool and it's rewarding, man. Because, you know, with me having this camera, and I mean, even if it was a digital camera, like it doesn't matter, but like I'm just committed to like that practice. And so I challenge myself to like, to like live my passion out as best as I can.
Yeah. And you've been able to, get your work into a number of galleries around town and you've had it even nationally. Where can people find your work?
Right now, my website, it's www.dirtykicks.com. One cool thing that I'm doing right now, I've been reaching out to people via Reddit and Craigslist and stuff, trying to set up portrait sessions, you know, and this is expanded into like your Hollands, your Mommies and all those places. So that's been a cool little side project, but galleries right now, I don't have anything just because I've tried to clear my plate just to like focus back on like the people because I was a little too busy.
Excellent. Yeah. Awesome. Thank you so much, James Dickerson, aka Dirty Kicks.
Yeah, appreciate
you. And we'll be right back. And welcome back. My next guest is a multidisciplinary artist working in painting, ceramics, and performance art. You may have seen her artwork at Culture Clash or at Riverhouse Arts. Sid Gottlieb, how are you doing?
Hey. Wow, thanks for having me. I'm honored to be here.
Yeah, it's good to have you here. Mm-hmm. Now, what I've seen of your work most recently are kind of abstract paintings and these ceramic dreidels and bagels that you've made. Can you describe kind of what motivated you to get into that kind of artwork?
Yeah, so the abstract has been there since the beginning. It was kind of the first way that I could transition from what I was doing into becoming a working artist. More of a personal exploration of feelings, energies, and honestly, they were exercises for myself in order to really gain technique and refine skills. And so the abstracts then kind of bridged into more of a public body of work that I now can reflect on and talk about, you know, what that means. But in looking at just kind of developing my own visual language, finding personal aesthetic, That abstract style is now, I think, what people recognize me for. And the dreidels and bagels sculptures, that was a very random thing that kind of came about 2 years ago now. I just finished my second season of production with that. And in the same way that the abstract works were a little bit ambiguous, I started to then become more open about, I guess, what they were really about, which was almost like map making for the self, establishing a sense of choreography, an escape route, a floor plan, all of these things that kind of linked back to my family history, my cultural history, which I am Jewish, and that's also why I make the dreidels. And my family came to the U.S. as refugees. My grandparents went through the Holocaust. So a lot of the tensions I was feeling as a kid growing up here in Ohio, because I'm born and raised Toledo, was just being a part of a very small kind of insular community and feeling a lot of anxiety when out in the public in more secular situations and not really feeling like I could bridge myself. And that's to say that I also didn't really feel like, you know, just my Jewish community was for me, but finding something that felt like me and that was kind of in all these different directions. And so the abstract work was kind of me working out different portions of my anxieties of my identities. With the abstract works, you know, it's like really settling on what feels cohesive, what feels like finding confidence through my mark making and blending and merging different skill sets, color palettes, and like finding what works. And then that is the blueprint for myself and going out into the world. And if I can make it work there, I can make it work elsewhere. If I can figure out the transitions and ways to bridge in conversation with different materials and, you know, working with that mixed media, making it work, then I can do that in conversation and socially and all of that. And so with the abstract works, I started to then talk a little bit more about how that was a coping strategy for myself.
Yeah. And that, on your website, you kind of have your artist statement, and it says you essentially are dealing with like healing. Like that's like a lot of what your artworks revolves around. And it sounds like as you're describing it, that when you go and you create art, you don't necessarily know what you're going to create. Am I correct in kind of assuming that?
Yeah, for the most part, you know, it's all in real time. I make in the moment. Sometimes I'll figure out, you know, the idea of the palette or the parameters that I'll set up for myself or maybe other people have set for me. And, you know, it's working within those constraints that I find freedom. And so I guess just to get back to your original question about the dreidels, that was kind of the same idea of like, you know, spinning and spinning and spinning with the abstract and the squiggles and the whatever. It's like, you know, you kind of,
you're sorting it out. You're working it out inside of yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. And with the dreidels, I was able to say, like, you know, this is a cultural item, and I want to be more public about, you know, who I am, and then also creating Judaica for people who maybe need something a little bit more contemporary for themselves.
So there is a kind of a community part to it, too. You're kind of showing yourself and inviting people to join you in who you are.
Absolutely. And, you know, you don't need to be Jewish to play. I created a whole little how-to card for people, and a lot of people have enjoyed some demos. And it's like, yeah, you can make it whatever you want. It could be, you know, just a fun game for kids. It could be a gambling game. It could be a drinking game. It could be, like, whatever you want it to be.
Right.
Pretty versatile.
Yeah, and it sounds like it's fun. It sounds like it's been meaning making for you.
Yeah.
You've been making art for about 2 decades. Am I fair in saying that? Is it roughly that amount of time, or?
Yes and no. Okay. I would say professionally, no, but making work always. So at least 3 decades. I was always drawn to art and language as a kid. Just kind of naturally picked up materials, painting. Grew up, you know, with different language in the house as well, and different influences, and so it just kind of created almost like this linguistic dance, I guess, in my head. Mm. I would see, you know, the different shapes, and also growing up and like being exposed to Hebrew, you know, it's like, why are there these lines and these squiggles? And,
right,
you know, and
right.
It kind of just creates like, oh, it's a different alphabet. And then I was like, oh, I can create my own visual lexicon, you know?
Yeah.
And that's kind of what I did. And then I didn't realize until a lot later that that's what I was doing for myself.
Right.
But professionally, it really, I think my experience as a working artist didn't really pick up until I moved back to Ohio. I was out in Boston for 11 years, went to undergrad and stayed, worked. You know, I had gotten into a few different schools for fine art for my undergrad and ended up not doing that, but always wanted to. Mm-hmm. And so...
But you studied actually language.
I did.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And it sounds like language, it sounds like art is kind of another language for you. Is that
absolutely? Is that yeah. Well, because it comes from trying to figure out a way to bring what is inside into the exterior realm. Trying to say what you don't know how to say, or what maybe mm-hmm. you can't say, and any way that you can express that and then build on that becomes recognizable. It becomes its own pattern, or you know, people start to make those little connections that you've already made maybe for yourself, and you can also show people how they can do that for themselves. So yeah, I mean, the language component really came from once I I didn't go for art, and you know, I regretted that, but at the same time I don't regret it at all, because it brought me back around with kind of a greater understanding for why I was doing what I was doing. I went to school for Hispanic language and literature basically because, knowing how my family had that immigrant refugee experience, I realized very early on that Spanish was going to be important for that next wave. And so I studied Latin American mm-hmm. literature, looking at how people turned, you know, oppression or persecution into liberation through fantastical short stories or film or these other ways to express, you know, political moments and instability. And so in recognizing that parallel, I was able to find more of my voice and create as well. Ended up even, you know, editing and translating on some books and working in museums, publications, you know, some related fields, and then kind of just came back around. I consciously moved back to Ohio because I wanted to be an artist, and I knew that I had to come back to my roots to establish that studio.
And what was it about specifically Toledo, Ohio? You know, Boston has obviously a number of different opportunities, including an art scene, you know.
Yeah.
Some would say maybe even easier art scene to pick up with. What was it about coming back to, you know, this post-industrial city that what did it unlock for you, I guess?
It unlocked a different kind of voice that wasn't necessarily resonating out on the East Coast. I think that maybe there was some nuance with being a Midwesterner that people didn't fully pick up on. I think a lot of the time I was kind of screaming out into the void of like prophecies of like, no, this is how middle of America feels or thinks. And they're like, no, we don't get it. but I also, you know, I was really afraid to come back because as a kid, I was just struggling. Mm-hmm. It didn't feel like this was the place for me. And the moment I left, I could breathe. And then I realized, oh, I've got to come back and kind of examine that fear. And there are a ton of people who maybe aren't going to make it out. And, you know, I want to talk in a way that resonates for them as well. I think it was just really finding a different style of language That's a little bit tough to pinpoint.
Kind of sounds like you recognized your audience. You recognized who you were making artwork for.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, there's that kind of idea of making for, you know, yourself as a little kid, mm-hmm. you know, and which is so true, though, because there are so many other people out there, you know, whether you're from the same cultural background or not. But, you know, economics are, I think, a little bit more understood in, mm-hmm. I guess, you know, the Rust Belt area. Yeah. It's a little bit more similar kind of playing field, I guess. And so when I came back, I, as you mentioned, you know, I worked at Culture Clash Records for about 4 years. And I think that was a phenomenal way to kind of reintegrate. It really is ear to the ground, feeling vibrations, understanding what people are about, what they're gravitating towards, what they're listening to. And, you know, where we are in the Midwest, being just south of Detroit, we're musical people, mm-hmm. even just in the way that people speak. The, you know, I think that's also why I liked Spanish, because it's more rhythmic in the mm-hmm. the way that you're speaking. And there's something about having that ear. Mm-hmm. And I also think, you know, it's kind of understood in a place also where there isn't as much formal education as where I was in the East Coast, mm-hmm. you know? And that's not knocking it at all. It's just a different way that I think, like, there's this almost like unwritten or unspoken understanding that just occurs here, because people are just from here. They know it, mm-hmm. they feel it. And it's really tough to connect with people in that way in more of a transitory place like Boston, where yeah. people are in and out for education. And yeah, I don't know. I needed some deeper roots, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. And I've noticed that too, as in my travels, that mm-hmm. it sometimes it's a little bit more difficult to get a genuine, authentic kind of response from people. Mm. People in Toledo do seem pretty open to making art, to expressing themselves, and being maybe a little bit less polished on
yes.
on what they mean to say, so it comes out maybe a little bit truer.
Absolutely, yeah. It's kind of more of an instinctual response, which mm-hmm. is what I think my work is all about, is really just kind of that go with your gut. And I love that Toledo is so DIY. You know, people get an idea and you have the community, you have the resources through your neighbors usually to figure it out, even if you don't have maybe the financial resources. And people are open to figuring it out with you, I think, you know, developing together. And that's really what I enjoy, is kind of stepping together in tandem, which is also why I've got into teaching here, you know, yeah. a little bit too, is kind of looking at more of an artist's philosophy, an artist's way of thinking. Mm-hmm. If I can do it and I can kind of work a little bit backwards to move forwards, you know, that dance, reprioritize, you can do it too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I've talked to you, we've talked personally about different funding sources. A lot of mm-hmm. times, you know, the working artist is a difficult role to inhabit, but I feel yeah. like you do a really good job of doing that. Every time I come across your Instagram or anything like that, you're always writing a grant or something like that. How did you get into that? That in and of itself is kind of a discipline, I feel like, that you've honed. Mm-hmm. How did you get into, like, looking for those? And a lot of those grants, I'm not actively looking as much as you are, but you seem to be just constantly looking. How did you get into that practice of grant writing and whatnot?
Yeah, and thank you. Yeah, written word is where I feel most comfortable. Mm-hmm. I can kind of be the architect on the page. And, you know, I do have to thank the liberal arts education for that. If you can organize your thoughts in a way that clearly expresses what you want, what you need, what you're about, people are very receptive, and it's an essential skill if you're trying to be a working artist. Mm-hmm. You're going to always be kind of butting up against funding and trying to find it, trying to get it, trying to show people why they should invest in you. You know, it kind of all started by accident for me a little bit. So when I first landed back in Toledo, which was 2018. I knew I wanted to establish a studio practice. I wasn't really sure how to do it. I didn't have money, and I kind of built it from the ground up. And it was actually during the pandemic when all of it kind of just came together a bit. I simultaneously, as the pandemic was unfolding, I had spinal surgery, and that was unexpected. It was emergency surgery. I had no time to prepare. I didn't know what to do. And so I was actually learning how to, you know, build from the ground up as I was learning how to walk again, too. So it was all together, and I was expressing my need. You know, I can't work a desk job. I have to be moving my body in a different way as I'm reprioritizing. This is what I want to do. I know how I work best, how I can think best. And so it was really just kind of a desperate plea in the beginning.
Okay.
And then, you know, and through social media, people were commissioning me to do things. And, you know, I was really building up a collector base that way. And then by the time I got back on my feet, I realized, oh, I'm actually like pretty good at writing. And was able to kind of move past, you know, the one immediate need into more of a greater need, which then extends to community and kind of, you know, again, using my experiences as teaching tools. But I will say that you got to see who's doing what you want to do and then see where they've been. You know, read the bios, read the CVs, what residencies, what grants. And I was really lucky to already kind of have a network because I had worked in the art industry before deciding to be the artist myself. So I had a good enough social media network that then it started to kind of generate these opportunities of, you know, I'll just shout out, you know, if you're looking, Creative Capital, Bomb Magazine, Fractured Atlas, all of these platforms have lists of grants and residencies. Their deadlines, you know, what you need, what they offer. So take it into your own hands. You can do it.
Excellent. That's so good. Thank you for sharing those resources. Yeah. Now, where can people find your work, around town or online?
Always feel free to interact with me on social media for, I guess, as long as I've got it. We'll see. Instagram is at Pishonk, P-I-S-C-H-O-N-K-02. Or my website, www.pishonk.com. I also have work at the Toledo Museum of Art store, and some other out-of-state galleries carry my work as well.
Excellent. Sid Gottlieb, a.k.a. as Pishonk, and we'll be right back with more after this break. Welcome back. We're here on Toledo Works, talking with local Toledo artists. Next up is an educator teaching at Lourdes and Bowling Green State University, Krista Saw. She does installation and performance art. Hi, how you doing?
I'm pretty good. How are you, Steven?
I'm doing all right. It's good to have you here in the studio.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah, and so I've known you and your work for a number of years now. If guests saw your work, I think it would, of the artists that we've talked to today, it would fit least easily into a traditional definition or a box. But I think if people saw your art, they would say immediately, oh, that's art. Can you kind of describe what it is you do?
Yeah. So I consider myself a performance artist who works in a bunch of different mediums. So I do video, photo, installation, but I also make books, websites. I'm just always thinking about the performative aspect, so like how someone is going to interact with it and be a part of it. But I would definitely say like what I do is create chaos so that I can control it. I think that's like the best way to think of it.
Yeah, and I think that comes across if you go to your website, KristaSaw.com. It's not intuitive. Like you have to kind of figure it out.
Totally. Yeah, I want to make someone have to do something.
And I think that's what's maybe why people who are interacting with your art would say, okay, this is art. Maybe because when you look at it, it elicits a response.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So like, how did you get into doing that? Because a lot of the aesthetic of your work is bold.
Mm-hmm.
It's also hard to kind of define, and it's hard to, I don't know, just put into words how you're kind of mixing a Midwestern aesthetic
mm-hmm.
with a number of different other mm-hmm. things going on. Can you kind of talk about how you got into that?
Yeah, for sure. So I grew up with really intense creative parents who are like far louder, far more extreme, and far more chaotic than me. So I think it's like how I learned to be seen by my parents. And then it became, I got to get like a word for it and it was art, you know what I mean? Mm. So it just feels innately to who I am. And, you know, I am very committed to my craft. I'm like an absolute workaholic, and pretty much like with the aesthetics, I've just been, you know, drawing on my, like, what I see every day to what stands out. And then like also being a woman, I think about how I'm viewed like a lot. So a lot of the images that aren't ripped from like the landscape of the area that I'm living in, which I'm from Toledo and I'm living here right now, are from just like looking at pictures of women.
Mm.
Pictures that I find like interesting or exciting or like do something to me at a sensory level. And so then I go from there.
Within art, I think you come across this concept most artists would know it. It's called gaze.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds like you're, when I look at your work, I see a lot of kind of perception based and challenging the viewer, challenging mm-hmm. people who come across your artwork to reevaluate the presuppositions about what they are viewing.
Mm-hmm.
Is that correct?
Totally, yeah.
And is there a kind of a message that you're trying to get across? You mentioned like your position as a woman. Obviously, there's a lot of talk about the male gaze
mm-hmm.
As a woman. And I'll zoom back out. So
yeah.
a number of years ago, you had a performance mm-hmm. here in downtown. It was I can't remember what building it was in, but I remember going to it and then people afterwards being like, oh, that was amazing. But then also being like, that was terrifying. Like that kind mm-hmm. of dichotomy of like, this is an uncomfortable experience. What what did you kind of go through in that experience?
Mm-hmm.
Because it was a lot of things. It was loud. It was
mm-hmm.
it was things that you wouldn't necessarily like. I can't imagine a person who's trying to polish their how they're viewed presenting themselves in the way that you present yourself in the performance or in the different things like that. It just feels very real,
mm-hmm.
real and also very visceral.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's really funny that you say that, because I've had students like ask me to show my work because I'm very resistant to showing
mm-hmm.
my students my work. And if you see my work, you'll get why. Mm-hmm. But they're always like, wow, you're so vulnerable. And for me, I'm just so disassociated when I perform that I like don't see the audience. I can't, because if I get too concerned with like how they perceive me, I lose the plot. But I guess two parts to that question is like, one, how I produce that work is I largely think of my work as scores. So I create like line maps of how I want them to flow. And that's how I construct it. And then I build off of that, like at an intuitive level. But I'm very like practical and logical. And like my work seems intense and crazy, but it is very thoughtful. And
mm-hmm.
there's a lot of time spent constructing the world that I'm building. And I think the meaning to it for me is always around sensation. And I think what senses am I able to trigger in others is something that always comes up. And then also, how do I support people in having to sit with their discomfort? Because I think that we would all be in a better place if we learned to sit with discomfort and perhaps like grow from it, as opposed to, you know, be fear-based or trying to control it and trying to change other sensations into different things. So yeah, it's always very political, but it's not maybe like capital P political.
Yeah, it's not overtly, you know, left or right or anything mm-hmm. like that. It's more about like challenging how you perceive the world.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you mentioned your family, but how did you learn to create these performances, and how did you create that audience for it?
Mm-hmm.
Because your work is provoking, but I can't imagine, you know, like if I were a musician, I could go up to a bar and I could play a song, and they have a space for that. There's not really like you're essentially curating your own space to perform these different artworks where you're essentially making people feel uncomfortable in a lot of senses. How did you get into the business of making people feel uncomfortable?
Well, again, my whole life was that. And I think that being really nice and like being a Midwesterner, a true Ohio girl, has allowed me to like, you know, disguise myself as a secret freak who likes to like force myself into spaces. And so I think it's like this thing that we're always thinking about is how we present, you know, and taking what you have, which is like, you know, the skills I know, be nice, be kind, because I am truly those ways, and showing up as myself, and then allowing myself to challenge myself to do something that does make me really uncomfortable. Like, I am actually not comfortable performing. It's taken like a lot of work to get to that point, and to not really care about how I'm being perceived, but to trust what I'm doing is worthy of perception. And that's been like a very big just challenge for me in general.
Yeah, I can kind of relate, because I performed as a musician for a number of times, and there's an amount of stage fright. But I will attest to what you said before, is that like people don't necessarily see it coming, because you actually invited me to one of your art performances, and I had no idea what I was in for. It showed me something, just very different, and made me think about the world and the way that it works in a lot of different ways. I don't know if I would have understood necessarily what I was looking at if I didn't know you beforehand, but like knowing you was part of that.
Mm-hmm.
But even not knowing you, I could see how you're forcing people to figure out what you're saying, which is an interesting approach to art. Because art is this, there's a lot of different definitions of art, but in a layman's terms, if you have to throw a definition out there, it's, you know, communication of experience is one that I fall back on a lot. But you're almost refusing to communicate, and that in and of itself is a remarkable communication.
So one, I'm just thinking about, I'm more interested actually in forcing others to feel what they feel, less about what I am trying to make them feel. Like, I know what I'm feeling, and that's why I have to kind of like disassociate when I perform, to stay in my space of what I'm feeling. But like after shows, I get so much from hearing what people felt from what they saw. And less of like what they thought I was trying to say, you know?
Yeah. And what kind of, what do you receive the most? I'd be so interested to hear.
Yeah.
What do people say after your show?
So many crazy things, so many good things, so many beautiful things, so many kind things. A lot of people, I've gotten a lot of people just really complimenting or seeing like what I do as very fearless. And I'm not very fearful. But I do it to push myself through that, you know?
I, th- I think it is evident that you're fairly fearful, like, yeah, when you're doing it, because you can kind of see the nerves, and mm-hmm. Your work wouldn't work if you didn't have those nerves.
Exactly. Yeah. There's something to respond to for me with mm-hmm. my nerves, and then also I've had a lot of training within energy work and just also, again, referencing my childhood, being forced into a house with a lot of energy, mm-hmm. For better or not, I'm not sure, but I still like my parents a lot. But yeah, I'm always thinking about simmering and how much you kind of let something simmer before it hits a boiling point, but also so that it doesn't die and get cold. And I'm always playing back and forth with getting back to simmer, because I think that's where the magic happens, not when it's too hot and not when it's cold. But yeah.
So with that, if this ever starts to feel normal or regular for you, are you do you think that'll be a sign to stop? Or are you going to continue going? Or
no, I'll become a nun. I'll just figure it out. Life is always,
you'll push yourself. Yeah.
Life is not ever, I've not had a boring experience yet in life. Mm-hmm. If I start to feel a slight boredom, then I run away.
Right.
Many people can attest to that, and try to create a new environment for myself. So for me, it's always just about being able to stay present and create parameters which allows you to stay present, because if you're able to stay present, life is really interesting. It's mm-hmm. when you're not able to be present when life really starts to get, dim. Mm.
Yeah, when I think about your work, I think it is truly contemporary, because it's not you're fitting it into an app or you're mm-hmm. fitting it into anything. It is an experience. And even when you're making work for, a social media app or something like that, it's always a little bit, it's off. Mm-hmm. You're not saying, 10 things you need to know, there's not a hook to it.
Yeah.
But it is eye catching.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any descriptions for your own work? I know you just said that you don't like to talk about your own
work.
Well,
yeah. So. I mean, resistance, deep, deep resistance to mm-hmm. falling into anything, groupthink terrifies me.
Mm-hmm.
That is innately in me. That's not something I created. I'm just always resistant towards, I always just buck up, against mm-hmm. things that I'm supposed to be in. And yeah, I think for my work, I'm just always trying to challenge myself to put something that doesn't really feel comfortable for me to put out. That allows me to, because I'm resistant to sharing, that's when I should share.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very much about the process and the feeling, less about the visuals, but I know I've been trained as a photographer for over 25 years. I know how light works, and that's a very powerful tool to make anyone want to look at you or anything, is to know how light works. And so light and color, all these very basic, fundamental aspects of art
mm-hmm.
are hugely definitive to this very experimental practice that I have. But I'm very basic when it comes to the things I know that work, because these have worked for many generations,
Right. And I think there is a there's an understanding, there's almost a winking in your work that you expected me to highlight this part of the painting or mm-hmm. the photo or whatever, but I'm actually highlighting this part mm-hmm. of myself that most people would be ashamed of mm-hmm. or most people would kind of cringe at, and you've kind of leaned into what is difficult about being human,
mm-hmm.
what is vulnerable, and what is a little bit terrifying mm-hmm. about being human. I think about a lot of your work on Instagram kind of jumps out to me, because you'll throw something up on Instagram and then you'll take it down,
mm-hmm.
but a lot of what you're throwing up there are kind of these, they're not glamorized photos, they're Midwest kind of people that don't look like you're not trying to flex, like you, but you are trying to flex. It's hard to explain. It's like you're either you're highlighting your belly, you're highlighting like these different parts that people try and like tuck away or make look nice, but you're glorifying them, and you're doing so, you know, in the backyard next to a kiddie pool or something like that. And it really does make me like when you see it, the communication is formal, but the highlight and the push through is a little bit more like, what are you trying to say here? And it does make me think that when I see it.
No, it's framing, you know, again, photo principles. Like, you just, the more you do your work and you're committed to the work, you get good at it. You just have to make a lot of bad stuff. And then you get really okay at it. Okay at it, you know, but.
Excellent. Thank you so much. Yeah. Where can people find your work?
Oh, so KristaSaw.com is where I put up stuff pretty regularly. That's my website. And then my Instagram is Quack Actress, Q-U-A-C-K Actress. And mostly see it live, because I think it's best viewed like that.
Excellent. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks for joining us. I'm your host, Steven Zenner. I'll see you next time on Toledo Works.
The Local Thread is a production of WGTE Public Media. Episodes can be heard weeknights at 7 on FM 91 or anytime at WGTE.org.